Yes, we are going to talk about training, but before we do that, I would like to talk about what the community health workers do. And the reality of our work is that we respond to community conditions, and these are the things that we find in our communities. Poverty. Sometimes we do home visits. Sometimes we work in the communities doing health fairs. But you know, our health fair tell us to do asthma education, and sometimes communities people are not ready to listen anything about asthma. They want to talk about they don't have food in their homes, or they are afraid of immigration, or you know, families have been deported, or any other issues that are listed here. Okay, so this is all that we find in our communities. So considering all of these conditions, community health workers, how can we work under all these conditions? And so when we're doing our home visits or health fairs, we help people examine themselves critically. Instead of looking for their needs, assessing their needs, we assess their strengths and their abilities and their dreams and their hopes. Also, we help people understand their condition, their causes, reasons, and we also help people access resources and all those things that are listed. I don't want to go over all of them. I just want to talk about those two that help people develop their own goals, because I see, I work in a hospital, and I see that usually doctors tell them, you know, tell the patient that they want to develop goals, but sometimes I hear that the goals are very unrealistic, and that's not what we do. We help them figure out a way in which they can be successful are accomplishing these goals. So the relationship community health workers have with the families that serve is unique. It is a relationship based on trust, respect, understanding, and empathy. It's not a relationship based on authority or power. We share this power, this information, and these resources that we have. You know, it's not commanding or controlling. You know, even when people come to the sessions one-on-one at the hospital, I have a table, but I don't have to. The person doesn't have to be at the other side of the table. I pull a chair next to me and we talk. You know, we provide the environment so they can trust us. So everything is based on empowerment, so they can be self-sufficient, so they cannot, you know, depend too much on us. Okay, guys. So usually community health workers are hired and receive training available through their employer organizations, and the training is typically didactic and uses training, traditional training methods, and it's usually focused on the employers. Like for example, if at the beginning I was trying to work in a place where it was asthma, I have to provide asthma education, so they gave me all the information on asthma, and it was boring. And not only that, but I was afraid that I couldn't provide my community with the information, because if I didn't understand this information, and I'm, you know, I am going to school and I can understand pretty much, you know what I'm saying. It was hard for me. I felt afraid, and I didn't want to give misinformation to my community. So, let's see. And and it was also driven by the agenda. It was 5 minutes in this, 10 minutes in that. So everything was, because they provide me with an agenda, and they were on point. Everything was fast, a lot of information, and it was boring. So I needed something else, but I didn't know what it was. And you can show that on this side. So you see, if you see this picture that I took, you see that guy in the yellow sleeping. This is what happened with didactic workshops. And you see the guy in the black? He's sleeping. The girl in the middle with the pink pants, she's eating. She's okay, and I took another picture because I was missing the girl in the back over here with the pink, she's sleeping too. Okay, so I discovered why I couldn't understand the trainings that they were giving me, because I was being dictated to, I was treated like I was an empty vessel, and like I didn't know anything, like my knowledge and wisdom was ignored, and I was not allowed to practice, to look at the people around me. I was there for 3 days with them, and I didn't know their names. So there is an old quote attributed to Confucius that says, "Tell me and I forget, show me and I remember, but lend me, I understand." And I understand. Most of the training that we receive is people telling us stuff, and we don't want. Oh, so now I'm going to tell you some methods on how we can remember and we can understand. And for that, I'm going to ask Sergio to talk about that.
Thank you, Romelia. So she said she needed something else. And we heard Romelia's anguish from community health workers all over the country, and in the Caribbean countries where we were working. They yearned for training. Many people say, oh, community health workers don't want to learn. They don't want to come to training. No. They yearned for training. They wanted to know more so they could serve their communities better. Yet they learn in different ways. Lecture was not a useful way for them to learn. So they asked us, I'm talking about hundreds of community health workers that we spoke to, asked us to develop a training program that was more appropriate for our work. We also found through those many, many interviews, discussion circles, and focus groups in 9 different countries, we found that community health workers needed training in core competencies that have come to describe our work. Many, many people had the experience of Romelia, where they were hired by a program that had a health topic specificity, and that's the training that they received. They were hired many times by programs that employed a clinical model, right? And yet, clearly that clinical model wasn't being successful. And so they hired community health workers because community health workers were something else, right? They were something else, brought them into the system, and then tried to make us like them. It just didn't make sense to community health workers, right? And so they asked us, please. I have 16 asthma certificates, but asthma is not what my community needs. I have a responsibility to my communities, and I need help with the core competencies that help me do my work. I don't even know what they are. I don't even know what it is I need, but I know that I need it. We researched a lot of the work that Dr. Rosenthal and Ann Willer presented to you, and the core competencies that describe our practice are documented. It's published, it's accepted all over the country and all over the world. So, but community health workers told us, without a firm grasp and appreciation for the core competencies, all this health-specific information really has nowhere to live in my being. I can learn all there is to know about asthma, But without a base of core competencies for it to fit in, I don't know what to do with it. I can't translate what you're giving me into something my community can use without my core competencies. Right? So we had to develop a core training for community health workers in core competencies. In a this was the eventual product. We developed a module for each of the 10 core competencies. It's all participatory. It's all interactive. It's created in a modular structure so that different organizations can pick different pieces of it. And it can range anywhere from 70 hours to 120 hours for core competencies, depending on what kind of investment you want to make in your staff. And then we made a separate disease-specific modules to deal with the chronic disease management hysteria that's going on in this country. And that can range anywhere from 12 to 50 hours and includes those content areas. In addition to the content of core competencies, community health workers were telling us that the training had to use interactive participatory methodologies. They didn't want to sit somewhere for 3 days and sleep. That wasn't a useful use of an appropriate use of their time. Community health workers do not lecture, so lecture was not an appropriate way to provide training for them. Such training the training methods that we're going to talk to you about are sometimes called liberation education. In its origins, it's often referred to as popular education. But I'm not going to use that because out of respect for the theologies of popular education, that's a much more revolutionary approach to education and it more liberating in a very real sense. And some of our colleagues in history have lost their lives because of their commitment to that type of education. And so I want to honor that history and tradition. And we have personal friends who have lost their lives in countries in South America because of their commitment to freedom and liberation. So we defer from using that terminology out of respect for those colleagues. But the methodologies are all participatory. They're all interactive. It's all experiential learning. The core of these training methodologies are that the trainer does not impart information, but rather provides an opportunity for discovery in all of these opportunities. The methodology is flexible and responsive to participants. So there is no 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. There is a general approach and there is a general content that you want to cover, but the timing of it depends on whenever the participants discover it and put it forth. It doesn't depend on when the trainer decides that it's time to go on to the next session. This is scary. If you're a trainer, if you're an educator, this is scary. This is much, much, much harder than a PowerPoint presentation. And maybe we'll get to that. And of course, they are much harder for the trainer. Our training, by necessity, is delivered by a team. On this team, you see Romelia Rodriguez. The woman on the left, on your left there, is Dr. Lynn Roberts from CUNY. And I'm the third person. I'm not in the picture there. But our training faculty, although we're three of us working at the same time, we are constantly occupied and busy, either running activities, debriefing activities, or preparing for the next activity that's going to be conducted. So you can see in this picture here, while I'm actually delivering an activity or debriefing something or working the crowd, the rest of the faculty is busy creating materials for the next activity. Notice also, oh, I'm sorry, can you go back? Notice also that the materials that we use in our trainings are simple, colorful, and playful. And that's actually a very deliberate decision on our part. We use playful materials to help break down some of the hierarchies, stiffness that exist, that you know if you're a trainer, exist in groups. Our training, because it's so participatory, demands full participation from the people involved. And so we do a lot of effort in breaking down the barriers and helping interaction. We're going to show you some pictures of some of these activities. You will never, ever, ever come to one of our sessions, one of our trainings, and see people sitting with their backs to each other. You will never see this kind of an arrangement because this kind of an arrangement is oppressive. It prohibits you from sharing your wisdom and your experience with the people around you, and that's oppression. When you're not allowed to share people's wisdom and understanding, then you're dependent on what I'm saying. And if you're dependent on what I'm saying, then your experiences are limited by my experiences. If you're able to share amongst yourselves, listening to me will never create new knowledge. It will only create what I know. If you're able to share amongst yourselves, that's the only way that new knowledge gets created. And so you'll never see this arrangement in any of our sessions. Okay, this is another picture. You see how busy people are. You will also notice that participants are seldom sitting still either. Most of our training involves movement, interaction among participants, and holds a deep respect for the theories of multiple intelligences that different people learn in different ways. If you want to know more about that, Google Dr. Gardner, and you'll see. I remember working with a colleague once who did her best work when she was running. So whenever she had a deadline or ever had to create something, she would go running, come up with wonderful ideas, and then was able to sit down and create and write and document them. Okay. The principles of liberation education, our methodology, are these. Remember that liberation education involves providing opportunities for participants to share their knowledge, wisdom, and experience. And these are the principles that guide our training. We always ask first. And this is I would guess in your experience in being involved in trainings and education, even if you're given an opportunity to contribute, you have to listen to a lecture first. Maybe after the lecture they'll say, "So what do you think about that? Or do you have any comments?" Right? We completely reverse that. We have an agenda. We have a content. We have a set of content that we want to cover and that we want to share. But we always ask for people to share their wisdom first. We ask participants what they know before we tell them what we know. We provide opportunity for participants to fully share their wisdom and experience. We use a lot of activities involving discussion, and we document whatever people contribute. We use a lot of brainstorming. We use a lot of flip charting. Usually by the end of our session, all the walls and windows are covered with the flip charts of what people have created. If you've ever done any facilitation, you know that one of the core roles of a facilitator is to create lists. And we create lists. I will stand here before you, and perhaps the largest take-home message I want to deliver to you is that in my huge experience in training community health workers across the United States, the Native American nations, Hawaii, 9 countries in the Caribbean, I can guarantee to you that if you ask participants, they will provide the content you want to cover. They will provide it. They know. People know. Okay. And if you run it in that way because they've given it to you, it is more powerful. Something that comes out of the mouth of a participant is infinitely more powerful than anything you can deliver. In our training sessions, the trainer is a part of the group. The trainer is not apart from the group. The trainer is not behind a podium. The trainer is not behind a desk. The trainer is an integral part of the group. And we ask permission of the participants to share our experience. We ask permission from the participants to contribute our experience and wisdom to whatever the activity is. When we ask, wait for an answer. You know, there was a study done about 20 years ago where researchers actually went to grade schools, high schools, and colleges and asked students, when the teacher, in your life experience in education, when a teacher asks you a question, how long do they wait for the answer? What do you think? Three? You get a green card. 3 seconds. That's insulting. Haven't you felt insulted when somebody has done that to you? Do you think they cared when they ask you that? It's like, how are you? Good? Okay, see ya. Did they care? No. It's insulting. If you're not going to wait for the answer, don't ask. If you're not interested, don't ask. But if you ask, then respect the answer. Honor it, recognize it, and refer to it whenever you have every single chance you have an opportunity to do so. Set up situations where you give people the opportunity to discover. Because remember that quote from Confucius: let me, and I understand. Okay. And then after you do all of that, if there's something missing, if something hasn't been covered, try to use a debrief to cover whatever has been missing in your contact, and use lecture as a last resort. So this is some. I just wanted to show you this picture to show you the. Notice the. This is an activity that we do to help people identify their biases and prejudices, something which we all have, but health workers have a hard time identifying it. doesn't quite fit our image as a servant to know that we have biases and prejudices. So it's a sensitive issue and one hard to discuss. But you'll notice in this picture that people are engaged, they're smiling, they're participating, even though it is a very difficult topic to cover. And also notice all of the brainstorming flip charts on the wall in the back. Okay. This is just a picture to demonstrate that the trainer in these sessions is not separate from the group, but actually participates with the group and mixes and mingles with it. The core competencies that we cover are these, and they've been discussed already, and the curriculum isn't the big deal that we want to talk to you about, but rather the methodologies that are involved. This is a space that we were given to use that was set up in this traditional way, and you will see that the spaces we use are not structured or rigid. Space in our approach to education, space is used to improve participant interaction and participation. The participants control the space rather than the space controlling the participants. So although this was a very organized setting when we got there, we changed it. Participants actually seldom get to sit. Here's another room where although they had tables and chairs, they really didn't get to use them very much. We actually require that people interact and share. And they assume some rather uncustomary positions, too. People use the floor, they use chairs, they use whatever they have to use. I just want to talk to you about the disease management modules, because even though the health topics had to be taught in a different way, even the health topics, the things that were content heavy, really had to be taught in a different way, because I'll give you an example. We have in the asthma class, the very first thing we do is talk about what is asthma, right? And we run an activity, a card game actually, where we give people a bunch of cards and they have to decide what is in a definition, what is not in a definition, what might be in a definition. And then we generate lists of people's responses. And of course, some words come up in all three columns, right? And then the participants have to negotiate and resolve where each word should be. And by the end of it all, they have an asthma definition. It takes 90 minutes. Asthma is a chronic inflammatory disorder of the airways. How long did that take?
2 seconds.
Asthma is a chronic inflammatory disorder of the airways. 5 seconds, 3 seconds. Why do I take 90 minutes to do that when I could have told you in 5? Why? They generated it. They created it. It's theirs. They did it. And that simple fact, the fact that it is theirs and they created it, and because they created it, they are proud of it, they own it, and they will remember it. That's worth 90 minutes. Because my 5 seconds is really wasted. They're not going to remember it because I did it in 5 seconds. So we develop participatory methods using the same guidelines mentioned before to teach chronic disease management. So, I'm doing good. So I wanted to show you a couple of the modules. I'm not going to go through all 10 of them. But, for example, this is the module on developing a community health worker approach to working with families. And you'll see that it covers a lot of adult learning methodologies, multiple intelligences. The whole curriculum really has a deep respect for the concepts of multiple intelligences and the fact that not everybody learns the same way. Some people learn much better when they're moving. Some people are logistic and mathematical and scientific in their thinking. Some are more artistic and musical. Some are more kinetic and must be moving around. That middle piece there on less than 2 is an activity which, in a very powerful way, shifts people's perspective away from viewing situations as weaknesses and needs to identifying strengths as an initial as your initial approach to working with families. It does it in a very, very, very powerful way, a life-changing powerful way. And a lot of this module is dedicated to helping people understand the differences between providing a service and providing development opportunities, the differences between making people dependent and oppressed and making people free and liberated. which is complicated considering that we all work in a service system. But service can be provided in a way that's liberating and freeing. And of course, at the end of every module, we have extensive discussions about the role of community health workers in all these different situations. This is another one. This is our communication module. And you'll notice that it is pretty extensive. It's 20 full hours. I laugh because sometimes I see communication modules that are like 35 minutes. And I'm like, How do you do communication in 35 minutes? This communication module is actually modeled after something done down in San Francisco by Jenny and her colleagues. And it's based on the work of Center for Nonviolent Communication, which teaches a form of communication based on compassion and understanding and empathy. It's called the language of the heart sometimes. And their symbol is a giraffe, their logo. You can go on the internet, and this is a global organization. Their symbol is a giraffe, and they use that because the giraffe is the animal with the largest heart in the animal kingdom. This is a full 20-hour curriculum that we did. We dedicate a full 20 hours to communication. These are some more activities that we use to provide opportunity for discovery. Health promotion is a big deal today, right? But I often go to these workshops and trainings on health promotion, and they talk about health promotion for 20 minutes, a half hour, 2 hours if I'm lucky, right? And nobody ever really, I've never really heard anybody talk about the importance of behavior change. Everything we talk to people about health promotion involves behavior change. And think about whenever you've tried to engage in a change and how difficult it is and how long it's taking you to do it. And yet we very frivolously talk about health promotion in a half hour. We think that because we give somebody a flyer, they're going to stop smoking. Right? We talk to somebody about safer sex or give them a condom on a street corner that they're going to use a condom and that they're going to change their behaviors and engage in safer sex. Or dare we say abstinence? Because we talk to them on a corner for 10 minutes? But yet we assume this stuff. Our curriculum is around health promotion and behavior change is a full 16 hours and includes the stuff Romy was talking about, setting goals, setting realistic goals, responsible goals, achievable goals, and strategies to achieve those goals. And I'm going to show you one more because this is an important role of community health workers, and that's the one of informal counseling. Perhaps the most important thing community health workers do in their work with families is informal counseling. Yet we give very short shrift to helping community health workers develop the ability to do that. We talk about power and privilege. We talk about the differences between power and privilege. We talk about the fact that privilege is a reality. Privilege exists. Privilege is not a feeling. We help people understand, and through a sharing of their own personal experiences and through some activities, the effect of power and the power that they own. When you walk into somebody's life and you have something that they need or want, you have power, and you need to understand the effect of that power and the fact that you have it, or you won't be able to develop a really trusting relationship with the person, and you won't know how to use that power. And so we do a lot of work around helping people use power with instead of power over. Power over is their common experience with the healthcare system. And so we really help people understand that. We do a lot of work around personal and professional boundaries, which is another area that often gets short shrift. And a lot of stuff around biases, prejudices, and labeling. We're good at labeling people in the healthcare industry, right? People walk into you're an asthmatic. Oh, you're a pregnant teen. Oh, you're sexually active. Oh, you're a smoker. Oh, you're a smoker? We label people, and labeling can be very, very harmful. In the relationships that community health workers have with the people that they serve, labeling really has no place. It is harmful, it is damaging, it is destructive to their relationships. And so we do a lot of work around that. These are just some more pictures of our activities. So I'd like to take... Wow, we're doing good. Yes, you can. I want to take a few minutes to talk about what community health workers have to say about these participating in these trainings so that you get a sense of that. And the way we do that, we do it three ways. First of all, we do an individual evaluation every day. And secondly, every day of training, we select three of the participants to act as group evaluators. And throughout the day, they observe the group dynamic, group participation, our conduct. And they, when the group is doing their individual evaluations, they caucus and do a group evaluation. And lastly, we do final evaluations at the end of each module. Evaluations are built into the training. They're not an afterthought. They're not done in the last 15 minutes of the day. We actually carve out a piece of the late afternoon, maybe 2, 3 o'clock, to do these evaluations. And every time we do an evaluation, the next day we report it back to the participants. And when participants contribute evaluatory comments, that evaluation comments that we can implement, we actually change the next day's training to reflect those. This is another activity. I tell you, these guys don't get to sit down. They don't get to fall asleep. So I'm going to ask Romy to go through a couple of these evaluation comments, if you don't mind. Is that all right? Does that make sense? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Sergio. So these are some of the comments. This program changes your heart, mind, and soul. It satisfies the craving to become a better person, not just a community health worker. Thank you for everything. Everything I learned this week will not be forgotten, but carried with me every day in my future, which is today. We sometimes revise evaluations when we have the opportunity to be by the beach. Okay. Another one, the facilitators put us in a mental and emotional state, which brought us to think about the way we need not to deal with our clients. Continue to do what you're doing. It's changing the world gradually. I think this program turns someone into a new person. Thank you very much. I am not easily impressed, but I must say that I am in a profound way. This training qualifies us as the professional trained community health workers. I will encourage you to continue striving with excellence. Thanks. Thank you. I have opened up myself like never before. Tear my soul, a heart apart, cry a few tears, and deep soul searching. I wanted to cry, scream, or hit someone, knowing how long I was carrying this around with me. But thank God, I got relief. I was free for years. It was a burden, and now I am free. Thanks, and may God bless you. The program helps and allows you to come in touch with your inner self. It challenges us emotionally and puts us to the test of asking ourselves some very serious questions. This allows us to look critically at ourselves and our work ethics. This program should be part of our school's curriculum, our churches, youth groups, various places, and the list goes on. This way, everyone will be on one. Keep up the good work. You change my life.
I've learned to change my way of thinking and to slow down. This was an eye-opener about myself, an area about me I had not looked at until today. So much to process today, it is weighing heavily on me. This class should be available to everyone in customer service. It is really, really needed. And lastly, I just want to go to the last sentence. I'm sad that just so few of us were exposed to you all. It provided us with life tools that are applicable and practical to every aspect of our lives. These are evaluation comments. I mean, people put this on an evaluation form. I've been in places where I can't even get them to check a box. And here people are telling us, this is amazing. This is why we have to go to the beach, because we cry when we read these evaluations. We can't believe that just because we allow people to interact and talk to each other a little bit, this is the result of this kind of training. It's absolutely amazing stuff. We always provide an opportunity for closure when we do these trainings. Whether it's a 35-hour or a 70-hour training, we always carve out 2 or 3 hours in the late afternoon of the last day for the participants to do whatever it is they want to do. We don't tell them what to do. And we don't provide any time during the training for them to prepare what they're going to do. But we tell them that this is their time and they're able to do it. I want to give you a couple, just 3 examples of what we've seen them do. This particular group, this was in St. Lucia in the Caribbean, the British Virgin Islands. I'm sorry, it's St. Lucia in the Caribbean. This particular group actually decided to hold a spiritual ceremony to celebrate what they had discovered about themselves and accomplished. And they did this, you know, on their own. And they sang some hymns. They did some spiritual recognition of what had accomplished to them, and to thank their higher power for allowing that. It was deeply moving. The things that they're holding there, what they did was each person had to go home and identify a spiritual quality that they discovered about themselves that they appreciated and want to enhance. And that was what they held there. And these are the things they came up with about themselves. Okay. This particular group, this was in Tobago. And this particular group decided that each participant would come up and honor us individually and honor their experience with us. This was a week-long training that they did. Some decided to recite some things, some decided to give us gifts, some decided to pray for us, that we be given the opportunity to continue our work. Just amazing stuff. And I want to show you one more. This was a group in Trinidad, and they decided to create a show at the end of the training, and they actually created a script, a five-scene play. And there were three scenes, one scene honoring each of us, and then one scene honoring themselves as a group, and one scene honoring their community. And they actually, they created a play, and they performed it. They created the words. They created songs with words and music, and they used their own traditional music as background. I can't tell you how deeply, these people are moved by this type of an experience. But I want to thank you. And we have a lot of fun. This is our faculty. This is the awards, the certificate ceremony. Have you ever been to a certificate ceremony? They call your name, you walk up, they give you your certificate, you shake hands, and you walk away. That's not what happens to us. This is the kind of stuff that happens to us. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to present some of this work, because it really has been life-changing. And I want to ask Graciela to come up and talk about her program and how she's implemented some of these methods. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Graciela Camarena, and I was born and raised in Mercedes, Texas, and also, I guess you could say, Blissfield, Michigan. I grew up as a migrant farm worker, and I was, I guess, always a promotora de salud from an early age of probably 12 that I remember helping families and connecting them to services. I just want to kind of pinpoint a few things that Sergio and Romy have already mentioned about methods that don't quite work with community health workers. And I want to start with asking, some questions, but some people think lecture is an effective way of teaching. And I want to ask the audience, how many of you think that, with a show of hands, how many of you think that lecture is an effective way of teaching? That's right, don't be shy. I know the majority may not think like that. Wow. Okay, no one? Okay, now let me ask you then, How many of you think that lecture is not an effective way of thinking, with a show of hands? Okay, great. So may I ask you, would you mind replying why you think it's not an effective way of teaching? Thank you. Anyone else who raised their hand want to share why they think that? Okay, over here. Mm-hmm. All right. Anyone else want to share? Yes. Okay, so you have that experience, huh? Well, what just happened here, what I wanted to kind of point out is, even though we are in the setting of, we're kind of up here and giving a lecture, it's so important to have interaction with our audience. I saw the smiles go up and the eyes go a little bit wide open, and it feels good to share, what you're experiencing, your knowledge. So again, this is relevant to what we do or what we want as community health workers, to be part of a training or part of a discussion where we are asked our opinion and our experience and, what we think about this. So definitely participating makes us feel as part of the training and definitely will enhance it. I guess the driving home message here is, and as Sergio mentioned, don't lecture to us. And when I say us or we, I'm talking about community health workers or promotores de salud. We don't learn that way because it is not a method that we use in our work. So definitely, if we are in a setting of training where we are being lectured to, we're not going to capture the information and use it in a way that is relevant to our community or our peers. Community health workers, I mean, we are who we are. We are mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters. We are helpers in our community and advocates. And we do want to develop our skills and to do our work better, but we don't want to be, I'll say this, you, please do not be offended, but we don't want to be the people who are out there trying to lecture to us or, you know, threaten about taking away their jobs and things like that. So I'll just mention that because there have been issues about nurses and social workers and others who may not really grasp the effectiveness and what community health workers do. And don't get me wrong, I'll say we will be nurses and social workers when we decide to. And I want to share my personal experience. I have gone back to school and through my professional and personal goals, and hopefully will in December graduate with a bachelor's in social work with cum laude and also Phi Alpha Mu, which is a social worker honor society, which I'm very proud of and worked very hard for. But I would not be there if it wasn't for my promotora experience. Gracias. Muchas gracias. With my promotora experience, I've been able to understand those lectures, you know, and those reading assignments and those PowerPoints. So again, that life experience that promotores de salud gain, the community health workers gain, we can put it into practice if we are able to be part of that and have ownership. So again, that life experience is very important. And again, I give thanks to, of course, the Lord for giving me a life and to be here, but also to the many mentors, to the many trainers who have not come to lecture me, to the many peers and promotores and community members of whom I've learned from. I've not only learned from my professors, which I also, you know, want to thank for everything that they've done, but I believe that the true learning experience has been from my community and from the peers. Well, with that, I want to share a little bit of experience of what we do with migrant health promotion and how some of our promotores have also gone to other organizations to gain experience as community health workers and their training. One particular training that I want to discuss, which was very recent, I will not use names or anything like that, but promotores were invited to be part of a train-the-trainer activity regarding environmental health, an environmental health curriculum with a focus on asthma. It's just a coincidence we've been talking about asthma all afternoon. But the feedback from that training was that, from the promotores was, well, yeah, the training was great, but it was definitely too much information, and it was expected that this one binder or this one box was all we needed. There was no interaction. Everything was very repetitive. The literacy level was not adequate for the group that was invited, and the English to Spanish translation was out in left field, definitely. So this was supposed to be a 1.5-day training. So that first full day, the participants, the promotores, were sitting all day just listening to a lecture. There was no type of verbal or physical interaction or participation. So at the end of the session, when they were asked, well, anybody have any comments? Well, definitely the promotor stood up and gave them some comments. It changed the whole training. The second half of that training, which was a half day, was with interactive activities, with games, with asking questions of each other. So that second half day of the training was more productive and more effective and more efficient than a full day of sitting and listening to a lecture. The promotores were able to organize and recommend what they wanted to see using the curriculum, of course, because the information was there, but they were able to use it in a way that was effective. Not only at the end of this training did the promotores, were they able to learn from it and teach each other, you know, what they understood about it, which was right on the money after the second day, But then they were able to go then to the community and establish a cleanup campaign, because this in particular training was about environmental health and asthma. So they took it to another level. They didn't just leave there with, okay, now I understand what asthma is, but were able to do something within their communities that they lived in regarding a cleanup campaign. It's starting with rural colonias and rural neighborhoods where they started cleaning out their backyards and, you know, just being able to be part of change in their community. So that was very relevant. Again, the training, as mentioned, has been part of a learning experience, and also because they learned in this way, then the promotores went back to the organization, trained other promotores, and then not only was it 5 promotores trained, but then it was 20 promotores trained, and then those 20 promotores each went into the community to reach at least 10 community members in small group sessions. So an effective training really will go a long way, and it will make change in the community. So again, the driving message again is lecture and these other types of traditional methods do not work with promotores de salud. And I'm glad nobody raised their hands at the beginning of that question about using lecture as an effective method, because I guess we know that now, and we've been hearing this message that by doing, we learn better, and by doing, we understand better. And if we understand, we will take action. And that action is what makes a difference. So again, I wasn't specific about everything that the organization I work for does, but I did want to give an example about what the power of community health workers, you know, the power that they have that makes a difference. And this power is not this authoritative power or this money power. We all know that. But it is more of a power of strengthening communities, of gaining knowledge and sharing experiences that you will not get, or they will not get, from a, you know, curriculum in a way that is just lecture, authoritative, top-down, didactic, just listening. We have to interact, we have to participate, we have to share what we know and what we've lived in order to incorporate that message or that information. So again, I just wanted to bring back that message and drive home that message about, you know, we love what we do, we care about our communities, we want to succeed, and we can do that by being able to share experiences and knowledge through methods that are effective. And, Sergio and Romy and others already went through that list, so I'm not going to do that again. But just, you know, continue to do that. I know many of you have already been doing this for many years. For many of you, this is something new, and that's why you're here. So continue to talk to us, and we'll share what we know, and together, you know, we can definitely make a difference. There's this quote that I've used before, and it was from a unanimous person. It says, you know, one person can do many things. Another person can do share other experiences, but together we could definitely go a long way. So definitely after this session, I'd gladly love to speak to people and share more experiences, and also talk to the rest of the panel if you have any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Graciela. Gracias. In closing, I just want to say training is much harder than lecturing. I, in spite of all my years, am absolutely frightened and terrified every single time I do it. As a trainer, you have absolutely no control over where this stuff is going. You have no control over your agenda, and you have no control over the result. But I can tell you in my years of experience in this, that it has always been a completely rewarding and fulfilling experience, and it has always worked. Take some courage, but it has always worked. So thank you for coming here. I want to thank my colleagues and the fellow panelists, and we'll be here if you have any questions.